It's the co-op again. Rebecca Bratton-Weiss here, one of your co-hosts, along with Matthew Tyson. Matthew, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. It's finally gotten cool in Alabama. The temperature's been nice. The weather's been really good the past few days. Wanted to start off with something kind of happy and positive before we talk a bit into...
What is cool in Alabama? What's cool in Alabama? What temperature is it?
Like mid-60s. Mid-50s to mid-60s. When you start getting into the 40s, that's when it's like considered cold. And then anything below that, people just stop communicating with the outside world. So we don't handle snow very well or cold very well.
Yeah, I remember that from Texas. It was so cold on the inside all the time because they were never prepared to deal with it. So, it's been chilly here, so I'm going into kind of dour cynicism mode. Everything sucks. Look at people being awful. And so that works really well for our podcast, right?
Yeah, you know? Absolutely, always.
We are very pro-life, but we're also very just willing
frustrated
to point out when people are being dumb. Yeah. So I wanted to pick up with something that kind of got me thinking of just as a metaphor for a lot of the problems we're dealing with pro-life issue, the abortion issue, but also with this whole problem of sexual assault, sexual abuse, and sexual harassment. This is actually about sex robots. Bear with me here. Yes, sex robots. If you know me, you know I'm actually writing a novel. It's kind of a futuristic feminist sci-fi with the premise of sex robots. So I've spent a lot of time researching this, and my friends kindly send me all the sex robot news items they can find. It's
great. There's a lot of
But I've been following it for a while. There is a lot of it. I mean, it's kind of like you're talking tech, you're talking geeky stuff, and you're talking sex. So it's the perfect storm for having both incredibly philosophical debates and just like, oh my gosh, kind of raunchy humor. Where are we going now?
Exactly.
So yeah, I started following this some time ago with concern because I've been consistently anti-porn, and I've kind of tangled with some of the sex positive feminists on this who, they call me, I'm a prude because I'm anti-porn. I think that sex work demeans women. I don't think it's empowering for women, and I don't think that sex robots are going to be a good thing. So, that being said, I was on Facebook, and one of these like right-wing kind of Lacey Cupcake Kate Pope Francis blogger people had just discovered that sex robots exist, and she was clutching her pearls and saying, where are the feminists now? Why aren't they standing up against this? And I'm thinking, the feminists I know have been standing up against this. I know feminists who have gone to conferences, who have written about this, who are researching it, opposing it. And so I said, hey, here we are. We've been on board. We've been doing something about it. And they're like, oh, what are you doing? Like, they didn't believe me. And I was like, well, we're researching, we're educating, we're debating. So I posted something that I had written, and they read it, and they were like, well, why didn't you mention blah, 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 blah? And I was like, look, this whole sex robot business is going to take an entire nonfiction book to address because there's so much that goes into it.
Yeah.
You have to look at all of the research. You have to look at the tech. You have to look at the psychology. And you have to be willing to read the arguments of those who support it and be prepared to debunk them and to take them on. So they seemed to think that this meant that I was, like, proposing that we experiment with sex robots.
Weird.
And that, I was going to set up some kind of, like, lab where we would all go in there and experiment with sex robots. I'm not sure it was a group with great reading comprehension. But they were like, no, that what you're talking about is immoral. What you need to do is use the natural law argument. And they said, well, obviously, since you're not using the natural law argument, you're the wrong person to be dealing with this. So obviously, feminists shouldn't be taking this on at all. So I'm like, wait a minute. Initially, you said, where are the feminists? And I said, the feminists are in the foreground of dealing with this. We've been on the ball. And I said, you know, we're glad you want to join up. Come on.
Absolutely.
The more of us, the merrier. Like, so my attitude is, if you want to oppose sex robots, join with me in doing it. But this is where they're like, no, we're not going to join with you. And so I'm thinking, first of all, they're not actually going to be engaging. They're not going to pursue this. They're not going to go to the conferences and argue with these people. They're not going to take on the sex-positive feminists. So it's almost like their real point isn't opposing sex robots or porn or whatever in the first place. Like, it was just an opportunity to trash feminists and to say that we are hypocrites. Yeah, yeah. And, like, I then was like, you know, I wonder if the real reason that they don't like how I'm doing it is that I'm putting this tremendous emphasis on the dangers of patriarchal thinking and women being regarded as objects. And I write about that a lot, that, you know, side by side with this idea of women as sex objects is this idea of women as necessarily submissive, these kind of feminine mystique. You can call it the feminine genius if you want, whatever, I'm not convinced. That's just kind of the flip side of the coin to the world of rampant secularism and sexual assault. And I felt like that kind of touches a lot on stuff that we've been dealing with, that we've been talking about, like what you've been dealing with the whole political situation down there in Alabama.
Yeah,
especially.
Yeah, well, I mean, it all kind of ties back into you know, we've talked before about in regards to being pro-life. A lot of times, one of the biggest problems you'll find with people on the right side of the spectrum is that they're, you know, they're Republican before they're pro-life. I mean, this is another situation, you know, like you talked about with the, you know, with the feminist thing, is people who are anti-feminist or whatever before they actually care about this particular issue. And you have all these really important issues that really end up getting used as, you know, I don't know. They end up getting used as fodder in these larger debates between larger ideologies. And I mean, and like you said, that's something we have going on in Alabama right now. You know, we've talked already, I think in the past two episodes we've mentioned the Senate race between Roy Moore and Doug Jones. And since the last episode, some allegations hit that Roy Moore, who is a horrible a homophobic individual who has
he's so nasty.
It's extreme, though. It's like extremist views regarding homosexuals, that you know, they should have no rights. I say that they should be we gotta get rid of same-sex marriage. Same-sex marriage is the cause for all these horrible disasters. I just is disgusted with homosexuality and just so hateful towards the homosexual community, because, you know, being a homosexual is this horrible, god-awful sexual sin and disgusting. And yet it turns out that apparently when he was like in his 30s, he was hitting on girls who were teenagers. The first allegation that came out was that he sexually harassed or sexually assaulted a girl when she was 14 years old. A few other girls, you know, the stories kind of started coming out that he was, you know, that he was actually really well known, that these kind of rumors were very well known for a while, but nobody had said anything. He, you know, he was kind of well known for trolling them all and meeting, hitting on young women. And another woman came forward today, that we're recording this podcast, which is Monday, this earlier today, another woman came out and said that she was sexually assaulted when she was 15 by Roy Moore. And the stories that are coming out, the original Washington Post story that broke all this was extremely well researched. It was it was extremely well sourced. That was a great article, great, wonderful piece of journalism. There was no good reason to doubt it. You would have much more reason mm-hmm. to believe the story over anything else. And then we have all these other allegations coming forward, and yet so many of his followers and even him himself just absolutely refused to acknowledge any of it. That in their mind, it is a complete and total fabrication, is a complete and total lie. There's just simply no possible way that any of this stuff is true, despite overwhelmingly convincing evidence. And it's insane because it's the, you have this group of people that is just so hell bent on the person and the idea and this you know, even people in the own Republican Party don't want more. This is how extremist this guy is. I mean, this guy represents a what would be considered a fringe faction of the Republican Party, except it's very concentrated in Alabama, and it blows my mind. But he has to win, and he has to win because Doug Jones is a Democrat. It doesn't matter what he may have done or what the allegations are; they're not true. And even if they were true, they're still going to vote for him because they've admitted that. Because they've got to stop Doug Jones, a Democrat. Because they've got to stop it. Because we cannot have a Democrat in office. Right. We cannot have a Democrat representing Alabama. So you have these people. It's just like, on the same situation you're talking about, these people who are more opposed to a Democrat than they are like child molestation and pedophilia and sexual assault.
Anything. Yeah, that reminded me of, it was last year, back before the severity of this was made clear to me, and the severity of this was made clear to me when Trump was elected. That was kind of the, you know, light bulbs, unhappy light bulbs flashing all around me. But prior to that, I think it was Jason Jones had written this article saying, basically, even if the Democrats were to succeed at coming up with some kind of a pro-life platform, it still wouldn't be worth it to accept everything else that the Democrats stand for.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, wait a minute. Like, oh, so you just said, you know, we've been told over and over and over again that pro-life, meaning opposition to abortion, is the only important issue. Everything else disappears. You know, we can't talk, anytime you try to talk about anything, they'll be like, well, abortion. Sexual assault, oh, well, abortion. You know, gun violence, oh, well, abortion. Mm-hmm. And now, suddenly, someone is openly saying that abortion actually isn't as important as just fighting the Democrats. At which point, I have to say, he's gone insane. That's an insane way to think.
Before.
That's like, fixated.
And people wonder.
He's a friend of America. So.
People wonder why we started this whole movement in the first place, or is because of that. Because that whole way of thinking, that Republican first, that right wing first ideology, is everywhere in the pro-life movement. And if you deny that, then you are then you're lying to yourself, because it is everywhere in the pro-life. At least it is on the face of it. And that's, at the end of the day, that's what matters, is what's on the face.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting you bring that up, the importance of how the world sees us, because I do know a lot of pro-life advocates who are very kind of boots on the ground working in like crisis pregnancy centers, the good ones, not the sketchy ones, and out there helping women. And when they hear the pro-life movement is filled with like sexist assholes, they're like, wait a minute, I'm not a sexist asshole.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I think maybe these are people who are often so busy actually doing good in the world, they're not reading the news, and absolutely, they have a really important vocation to fulfill. And I don't want to like say anything bad about them at all.
Yeah.
But I'm looking at the news, and I'm also talking to moderate pro-choicers, and like we've said before, they're amazed to find that we exist, that Rehumanize International exists, that secular pro-life exists. They've never heard of organizations that are anti-gun violence, that are pro-environment, that are pro-woman, and that don't go about trying to oppose abortion by just setting up roadblocks and then saying, you know, screw you and deal with it. So, the face of the movement is not a pretty one. And that, I feel like those in the movement who are well-intentioned kind of need to acknowledge that.
Well, branding matters. I mean, it really, really matters, even if you don't want to admit it. I work in marketing. Like, it's, again, you know, we've talked about before. Like, that's what I do for a living. It matters. People spend hundreds and thousands of dollars every year to present themselves to the world. And if a movement, like you said, it does. If you can have all these people doing all this great stuff, doing these great things in the back, but if they're not more focused focused on the face, the, how the world, the rest of the world is viewing the pro-life movement at a glance, then that's never going to change. Then they're going to continue to be, right. They say, I'm pro-life. The first thing people that aren't in their immediate circle are going to think is racist bigot or a crazy person or something right. like that. Because the face right. of this movement is turning the word pro-life and has turned the pro-life into a very loaded, nasty term. And that's what's right. made so much of our outreach. One of the, you know, that's the biggest obstacle is getting both sides to sort of reconcile the use of the word pro-life.
Right.
That's one of the reasons why we didn't want to avoid using the word pro-life is because it needs to be taken back and restructured and redefined. And so, but you're right, you know, and it's hard because you these people who are boots on the ground. That we know and all they're doing all these great things, and even people who are a little, even you know, different or you know, with approach on how we think the best way to handle abortion mm-hmm. even is these people that we still love and work for. That, you know, there is this line that you have to toe when you're criticizing the pro-life movement, but at the same time not wanting to, you know, upset or offend these people that you know are doing the good work. But right. I think it needs to be. I think like with anything, and I think this is the way that we need to look at it, is like with anything. We criticize Republicans. I'm not talking about every single person that has ever voted Republican or that believes in the ideas that the Republican Party is supposed to put out there. We're talking about the face of your party. We're talking about the people who are making mm-hmm. the most noise, the people who are being the loudest, the people that are taking up the most attention. Those are the people that people are going to pay attention to. And so, you know, we're criticizing that. We're saying that, you know, that needs to be fixed. Same with the pro-life movement, same with anything else. You know, we're never saying every single little bitty person who ever subscribes to ideology is a bad person, but you know, the image needs work, and the people who, yeah. or at least the people who are in charge, need to be replaced by more people like you. And I think that's kind of what helps us yeah. reach across those aisles with those people as well to build kind of coalitions as well, because we're saying, hey, you should be up mm-hmm. here. You should be on the face of this. We need to work to right. get you up here. That's,
right.
And we can work with those people. And that's one reason I think we can work with those people so well is because of sort of that shared common goal, I would say.
Yeah, and I liked what Chris Hale said last week about, you know, the infiltrating the NRA.
Yeah.
Which I was like, whoa, wait, what? And then I was like, oh, this is subversive. And
that's kind of interesting,
we do have yeah. this tendency to have, you know, ideological purity. And I see this even in the way people behave on social networking. Oh, this person said something I don't like, I'll block them. And I'm like, well, great, you've just created another bubble where mm-hmm. this person is going to have fewer and fewer opportunities to hear what you have to say, and also you're going to have fewer opportunities to hear what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you gotta stay savvy and keep an eye on these folks. So, you know, that's one reason I don't block people. I like to spy on them.
Oh, those people are a problem,
but,
man, because
you know,
you have
yeah.
I go back to the Roy Moore thing. Like, every time I see something posted about it, there is someone else out there. The first thing they want to say, the first thing they don't want to believe the women, the first thing they say is, "Well, why now? Why are they suddenly coming out?" This is the first thing people said was, "Why now?" So since the beginning of this whole ordeal, the answer to that has been addressed. Why is this suddenly coming forward now? Why now? Why now? Why now? That is becoming addressed, but you're still seeing that why now, the answer to the why now is everywhere that I'm seeing. And yet every time somebody posts
yes.
something about it, they're saying, why now? And it bewilders me. It's like, how have
yeah.
you not seen content yet that explains this? How is this still something? And it's because these people are in these bubbles and they are not communicating with anybody
exactly.
else outside of it.
Yeah, yeah, and so there's a real reinforcement of prejudice. And I'm sure, you know, that's a danger for all of us.
Absolutely.
Like the broader your sphere of experience, the more reading you do, the better you're able to diffuse that. But it also, you know, being open to a variety of opinions does not mean that you get rid of judgment. So I maintain my judgment, and I can say, you know, when these people are wrong. And I think that what does happen in their echo chamber is, and this is what's weird, is immediately after saying why now, someone, sometimes even the exact same person, will say something that explains you know, why it didn't happen before. Like, you know, women like to make up stories and get attention. Or, well, you know, I'm sure it's not 100% his fault. Or, you know, well, you know, if nothing else, I'll just deflect and say, what about Bill Clinton?
Because, right, exactly.
Bill Clinton erases everything else. But, yeah, they, they'll all kind of bounce these ideas around, and while they're questioning the validity of it because the women waited so long, they'll be proving very clearly why women would be afraid to speak out. So yeah, can we talk about that a bit? Because I feel like that's such a huge issue.
Yeah, and I want to, in its own right.
Yeah.
I want to say one thing about that, to leading into this a little bit, just to kind of put a cap on that idea of what you're talking about, this all this reinforcement. What's incredible to watch is someone who is, I'm digitally connected all day, every day, and it, what was amazing was seeing that first tweet from that weird, no, out of nowhere account, I think, that... that some woman knew somebody that said that the Washington Post paid him $1,000 to say something bad about Roy Moore.
Right.
Do you remember that? Like,
right.
I remember when that first came out. And this story is only like 4 days old. This is not an old story at this point.
Uh-huh.
Within 24 hours, that was being passed around as a legitimate counterfact.
Right.
Like, it was popping up everywhere. You watch this idea just get dropped into this bubble, and it spreads like wildfire. And when there's no one inside your bubble to say, no, that may not be right, it spreads like crazy. It's insane watching that happen. And that's dangerous with all this. As big of a check
advocate, oh my gosh,
it's dangerous. And I think that kind of plays into what you were kind of going into a little bit.
Yeah, I've seen that a lot. And I mean, it happens in my circles too, but I've noticed my kind of, you know, lefty friends are really good at being critical, usually within their own crowd as well as outside their own crowd. So I often will, you know, post something I've written and they'll say, well, I like this, but what about that? And if
right.
I post something of a from a dubious source, usually one of my friends who agrees with me will call me on it. So I'm not saying that we're superior, but maybe I'm saying that we're superior.
We debate
a
lot better than the mind does.
Yeah.
Not all of us.
I mean, that's why I was miserable at a right-wing university, because it was like there was no intellectual stimulation except for, you know, a few classes with some of the excellent professors who are there. But, yeah, it was not a good place for an exchange of ideas. So, yeah, to go back to this silencing of women thing, people accepting a tweet like that without checking up on it, like, they really want to believe that the women are lying, obviously.
Absolutely.
Now, so I have a question about that, and from my perspective, I'm like, what a bunch of bastards. But then I'm like, oh, well, what about when it happens to someone in our own community? Because this is, like you said, everywhere.
Yeah.
It's not just the, like, Republican assholes who are doing it. It's not just the, like, you know, powerful Hollywood secular atheist guys.
Mm-hmm.
It happens in every community. So maybe when it happens to one of your own, you're a little less willing to accept it at first.
Well, I think, you know, we're always going to have a hard time accepting that someone in our own community, in our own circle, has done something wrong. Because, you know, when you surround yourself with people, like-minded people, people you agree with, people you get along with, even if there's disagreements in some areas, it's people that you sort of share the same sort of ideals with. Human beings are tend to be very tribal in a lot of ways. And so it's very hard for you to sort of, you know, accept that maybe someone in your little circle has done something bad or something wrong. And it's natural, but it's something that you have to get over. It's something that you have to overcome. And I will say, though, that I think this is very true, perhaps even more so, with white Christian men, and issue and things like the Roy Moore case here. And because it's always with, I think white Christian men are the targets for when it comes to so many social justice activities, but it's because this demographic of people are so unwilling to accept change, and they're so unwilling to accept the fact that their community is flawed. And the reason for that is because white Christian men are generally, especially in more conservative areas like Alabama, white Christian men are raised to believe that the white Christian man is the ideal person. It is the gold standard. It is the ideal citizen. This is the moral authority, the person who has it all kind of figured out, whether it's from their parents or whether it's from their extended family or their community, whatever it is, nature, nurture, whatever. They are conditioned to sort of look at things this way. And so, whenever you have these white Christian men doing something as terrible as molesting a 14-year-old girl or any level of sexual assault, really, or any bad thing at all, corruption, anything else, it's so hard for them to accept it because it. Every time something like this happens, it chips away at the idea that the white Christian man is that ideal person. It chips away at it, and it reduces that. And you have these people who, I think, subconsciously are sort of faced with having to face the reality that their ideal person is not so great after all, that they're just as flawed as the rest of us, that they are, God forbid, equal to the rest of us, and that is very hard to accept for many people. So that's what it does, and so that's why you have such a problem with white Christian men, why they tend to band around these bad guys, and why it's so important for white Christian men to accept the fact that we're not the gold standard, to accept the fact that it's okay to call it out when one of us screws up and does something horrible and unforgivable, even if they're on side. You have to purge your movements of that. I mean, the left has just as many issues with it. You have people on the left that are coming out as sexual deviants. I was heartbroken about Kevin Spacey, You can't let that go.
You got to face reality.
Kevin Spacey, he molested a kid. Right. That's it. That needs to be it for him. Same with Louis C.K. I appreciate that Louis C.K. at least apologized the way that he did. At least he admitted to it in a little bit better fashion than we usually see. But I'm sorry, that dude's career is over, and it needs to be. And he needs to go into hiding and stay there forever and think about what he did for the rest of his life.
Yeah, and that that doesn't mean you don't create. Structures, avenues for rehabilitation and forgiveness.
Exactly.
But what bothers me is that then people end up focusing more on rehabilitating the perpetrator than on doing anything for the many, many victims. And, of course, this goes back to the marketing thing you're talking about, because we've got to make – there's this tremendous pressure in these far-right religious circles to advertise themselves as the ideal. So anyone who acts out of that if that's a powerful person, then that person has to be kind of, whitewashed and rehabilitated and all of the guilt flung upon the victim. And I've seen this. I have seen the sexual assaults shut down by at universities. I have seen the victims of sexual assault being told no assault happened, stay silent. If you talk about this, you will be expelled, because of course you've got to make the university look good. I've seen the religious organizations where an employee is assaulted and then her boss refuses to believe her because he was a good man. He wouldn't do that. And it does happen in more progressive Christian circles too. I've just been talking to a friend who's been, coerced and manipulated by someone she trusted, someone who is in a position of religious religious leadership who she thought was a feminist ally. Mm-hmm. So that's what's really creepy is I'm now thinking, you know, do we need some kind of checklist to figure out, like, right. you know, which of the men who say their allies are really allies? My first rule is if he's really your feminist ally, he's probably not going to try to immediately have sex with you. I've read so many things saying, you know, basically women stick together and talk to each other and also stick with the guys who you know you can trust and guys, you know, speak out. So, so my message to all of the guys, to you, Matthew, and all the other guys who are listening, that, you know, thanks for being our allies, and we've got a lot of work here to do ahead of us in unexpected places.
Well, I was going to say one thing. You know, we kind of talked earlier about, you know, people who are Republican for their pro-life. And you know, I think it kind of comes down to the sexual assault thing. You've got to be a decent human being before you're a man, I think. You know, just because you don't need to be obligated to defend another man just because he's a fellow guy. You know, we got to stick together. No, that's not what it needs to be. You have to be wary that it can happen anywhere, even among, you know, your own allies, even among people you trust. There was Rebecca, I don't know if you were familiar or not with a podcast called Citizen Radio that was really popular for a long time. I may have told you about this when it happened, but...
Yeah,
it was run by...
I definitely with the name, at least.
Yeah, it was run by a couple, Jamie Kilsey and Allison Kilkenny, and they were married at the time, and this is very strong, pro-feminist, radically left podcast. And Jamie was this, the male Jamie was this just hardcore, super duper hardcore feminist, did a ton of stand up and rants and stuff on feminism, was just this, you know, hardcore feminist dude. And a couple years out, some rumors kind of started swirling that, you know, Jamie was maybe not as down with the cause as he put himself out there to be, that he was known to be sexually harassed a lot of women when he was on tour.
Wow.
Kind of pressured them and manipulated them into sexual relationships. And it took a while for people to kind of catch on with that and really believe it because, you know, it's like, well, she's like, it can't be that. You know, it can't be, you know, not this guy, if anybody.
Not him,
you
yeah.
know, not
yeah.
him. And it was him. And that, and that's sad that it has to be like that. But I think it shows how deep this thing goes, that even, you know, whether they're doing it to be purposely manipulative or whether they're not self-aware enough to understand or whether they think because, you know, they're down with feminism that gives them the right to, you know, to make those extra advances. I know that sounds counterintuitive, but people do believe that, you know. It's kind of an old trope. Oh, he's just a feminist to get laid. Well, I mean, people like Jamie Kilsey make stuff like that true. So I don't know what to tell you. No, but you're right. You're right that, more men need to speak out about things like this. And a lot of them have been. And that's what's been so wonderful over the years as this sort of thing has grown, is that you've had a lot of these weird alt-right and right-wing men come out and defend people no matter what. But then you have what seems to be the stronger growing voice of men that have come out and said, you know, that, have opposed this stuff and have really kind of stood up and tried to be a good ally. And so that's nice to hear. That's really good to hear and see.
It really is. It's what really bugs me. Kind of the reverse of that is when the women end up bashing women victims. I don't get that. Like, especially because sometimes there's this double speak that goes on where on one hand they're saying, well, how could they not have known better? How naive they were. Don't they know how men are? But these are the same people who are like a week earlier saying, not all men, you know, how dare you bash men? I'm like, make up your mind. Are men monsters that we should all fear? Or are men these like wonderful protective father figures that we should never criticize? It's so just counterintuitive and irrational. And it's also a way of kind of not letting men be humans either. Like, men have to just be, just like, you know, women are just these cardboard cutout pretty things. Now suddenly men are these cardboard cutouts too. And that goes along with this idea of the strict gender roles, which they want to market so desperately.
And look, I'll tell you this, I come in Alabama, that kind of thing is heavy because it's a heavily conservative traditional area. So you do have a lot of women that would, you know, I've seen plenty of women that will sit here and tell you that they're disgusted with these men and that they believe these women and they stand up for all these women's issues, but they revolt at the idea of calling themselves a feminist. In this area, the word feminist doesn't mean someone who, you know, sticks up for women. It means someone, some radically left-wing, anti-traditional person. Because even these women that are standing up for these pro-woman issues are still, especially in this area, they still find themselves to what they would consider be more on the traditional side of things. And it's just another area of that fight. But I also don't think that the issue with feminism is that it has a marketing problem. Every movement has people you can ridicule and criticize, no matter what. But I think it's more or less of their marketing problem is actually someone else's marketing strategy. You have a lot of people who try to discredit feminism because they don't want to see women as these as equals or, you know, something like that. So
right.
I kind of want to end on this too and talk about abortion a little bit because we have to. Because
we can bring it back to
Earlier today, you know, I've been involved with the Democrats for Life of America, which is supposed to be the organization that represents pro-life Democrats, an official organization, and it's run by Kristen Day, who does a lot of really great and wonderful work. And I want to say I really do think she's gone through a lot of crap trying to get stuff done. But I've been disheartened with some of her messaging over the past year or so that seems to have move further and further towards the that sort of like more right wing old pro life movement stance. And today she tweeted something about not too long ago. She tweeted today: irony, attacking grown men for dating teen girls, but fighting like hell to protect their right to bring their victims across state lines to get an abortion without parental consent. Hashtag protect our teen girls from predators and abortion. And so the issue with that is that I get what she's saying. I understand where she's trying to come from. But the problem is the same thing that we have anytime we try to talk about any other social justice issue. And that's that we cannot ever focus on any other issue without saying but abortion. And I understand that from Kristen's point of view, what she's coming at is that pro-life Democrats are few and far between in the National Party, so they don't want to represent pro-life Democrats, and that wouldn't be great if in Alabama you had a pro-life Democratic candidate. Wouldn't that, you know, I'm sure there's more to that tweet than it says on the surface. But on the surface, going back to all this marketing stuff, these issues, on the surface, it just plays more into that idea that we can't talk about any other issue without talking about abortion. Right now, we're talking about someone who could have a seat in the United States Senate. Who could have a seat in the United States Senate. It's a very powerful position, who is not only extremely unfit for office as it is, but is also being accused of molesting children. Now is not really the time to try and make a pissing contest out of the culture out of this right now. The thing that we have to focus on right now is the fact that that Roy Moore is incredibly unfit for office, and he can't go to the Senate. All right, so I don't think abortion really plays into this right now. And like I said, we have to be able to talk about other issues. We have to be able to talk about other issues without also having to bring up abortion every time. Because not only is this a issue just of Alabama politics and politics in general and the fate of our country and legislation in the future, not only is it an important aspect in that, but because it's something that has now become specifically about sexual assault, any time we're talking about Roy Moore, we're also talking about sexual assault, because he's part of a much wider problem. He is he's part of something that, like we said, is happening all over the place. Something that is, people say we're having sort of a watershed moment with this right now. And so we don't need to distract from that by trying to do petty culture war stuff. And that is a that is the issue I think that people have with not just with the pro-life movement, but in everything. We do everything we can to distract from these conversations that we need to be having. And it just makes the problem worse. We're never going to be able to really get through to people and talk about this if every time we bring it up we go, yeah, but what about abortion, or what about Chicago, or what about this or that crap, or blah blah blah. So so I guess that's all the time for us tonight. As always, please remember to subscribe, become a premium member with Breadbox Media. It helps us out. It helps you out because you get cool deals and all kind of stuff like that. So thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next time.